is Danny, Dave, and more.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere.
Everywhere.
At 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
It is Danny, Dave, and more. The Seahawks just got finished with the first of 3 days of their veteran minicamp, and we welcome in now a guy who's going to get, he's not going to have to adjust to things on the fly this year. Justin Coleman's with us. Justin, how are you doing?
Hey, how you doing? I'm doing well.
It's got to be nice for you to be settled in here. Last year, you were acquired a week before the regular season. Have a full off season with the Seahawks. How's this been?
It's been fun watching all the guys develop and grow and seeing everybody compete and getting ready for the real season. And, you know, it's always fun playing with these guys out here who show a lot of energy. So it's been fun.
I like that you mentioned your teammates, Justin. Who are some of the guys that stood out? You're talking about guys growing. You got some young DBs out there.
Yeah.
Who stood out to you?
I mean, obviously Shaq Griffin. You know, I like him a lot as a player and as a person. And, you know, he's shown that he's willing to step up and be a leader and, you know, make a little bit more plays out there on the field. He's shown a lot of confidence and some swag. So, you know, a couple other guys that came in, not younger, but, you know, Mutchison, he's been doing well. And, you know, I'm pretty impressed with everybody, really. Everybody improved, so.
Yeah, we mentioned his name earlier. I see Mutchison making a lot of plays out there.
Yes.
Tell me this. How hard is it to, because Shaq moved from one side to the other, how hard is that in your opinion?
My opinion is not that hard because I've been playing nickel. I mean, I got to play both sides anyway. And
but you played corner at one point, just straight corner, right?
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, for me, I mean, I played in different defenses, 3-4, 4-3, or switching sides or whatever. And I don't know. I mean, I thought it was a big deal in the beginning, but you get used to it.
It's only difficult if you don't practice it, you know, during practice. I mean, we got time to practice right and left side. If you only practice one side, then you're not making yourself better. So,
does it matter if you're left-handed or right-handed, depending on which side of the field that you play? I asked that because Shaq Griffin said he was left-handed, and he feels like he'd be better suited for the other side of the field.
I mean, some people just – it's just where you feel comfortable. It's not – it don't really matter which hand you are, I mean, because – a lot of times you're going to end up using a different hand every play, so it don't matter.
What about Trey Flowers? How's he looking? Because he's making the switch from strong safety to cornerback.
Yeah, he's definitely looking good out there. You know, he got some long arms, great ability, speed, and, you know, he's showing that he learned the playbook well. He knows, you know, the technique well. So, you know, he's been out there making plays as well. I mean, but you can't really play on the ball, so it's – but you can definitely see that he's in position every time, so he's been doing well.
We're talking to Justin Coleman here. Does this feel different than it did last season? And it might be tough for you to answer that because you weren't here through last off season. But we've seen a lot of turnover, more turnover on this defense than we've seen in the past 5 or 6 seasons. How does it feel to you watching some of the cast change around you?
I mean, really, I kind of feel like I'm just used to all the change because I've been bouncing around myself. But one thing I know is that I've just been trying to find a role. I mean, obviously, I've been here, but I still got to find a role on the team and where I fit in and what I'm going to be able to do to help the team get better. So I just feel like it's not been overwhelming or anything, but, you know, it's just definitely something to look forward to, you know, with all the changes, because, you know, you got guys who just want to play out there, and then you got guys who, you know, who's going to play, and, you know, the changes, you just got to get used to all the changes and sudden changes and all that, so.
The role, last year watching you, the way you kind of stuck to that being in the slot and the slot corner role, do you have hopes of playing on the outside as well this year? What are the hopes for your role this year?
Man, I don't want to play anywhere they put me, you know. It don't matter. They put me at safety, I'll play there. You know, I'm going to do my best. I'm going to give it my all. So, I mean, definitely playing outside is, you know, that's fun to me. It's fun to play anywhere. But, you know, it shows more value for me. So, That's about it.
More you can do, right? Yeah, and I saw you a couple times playing outside. You do a great job with leverage, taking on blocks. I mean, you can definitely do that. And then, but, I mean, nickel, you're in probably 65%, 70% anyway. But every player we talk to, it's like you want to be on the field, right?
Of course.
In every way. And speaking of other ways to chip in, you're a heck of a headhunter as well on the punt team.
Yeah.
What do you guys call it? Gunner?
Hey, man, that's only for, that's only for the non-sinful ears.
Yeah, you got to be careful about the terminology that gets bounced around.
I can't say sinful ears right now. So we just gonna leave that on the field.
But I mean, you're good at that, man. That was fun. Is that one of those special teams that you would sign up for that you actually take pride in?
I take pride in all the special teams. You know, it's all effort, really. You know, effort and technique. So a lot of coaches are looking for guys who, you know, can make plays in special teams as well. So, you know, I feel like you got to take everything serious.
All right, so 3 years ago, can I take you through this timeline real quick? Because I want to get your reaction to this. I'm showing that September 4th, the Patriots signed you. September 5th of 2015, they released you. And then the very next day, the Seahawks signed you. And then 3 days later, you were signed again by the Patriots off the Seahawks practice squad.
That's correct.
What was that week like for you?
It was just long flights back and forth. I mean, I had no choice but to focus on the next thing because I never knew what was coming. And, you know, I kind of feel like, you know, some teams missed out. And then, you know, I had that hurt mentality where I was just like, why no teams want me? But then, you know, it's always new opportunities. And I feel like I was blessed with new opportunities each time. You know, a lot of people don't get the opportunity to go to another team, you know, or, you know, play football again. And I feel like, you know, just being blessed with another opportunity, I'm going to take full advantage of it. So,
did you have fun playing with the Patriots?
Of course.
Well, the reason I asked that, you know why I asked that, right? Did you hear about Cassius Marsh and what he had to say? He said he's with the 49ers now. He had no fun playing for the Patriots.
I feel like, you know, I just have fun playing football. So it don't matter who I'm playing with.
Yeah, and I guess it was because of Belichick, right? So the head coach, I mean, I never really interacted with the head coach that much anyway. I got a stupid question for you. When you get signed off a practice squad or whatever and they fly you in, do they fly you first bucket? Or are you sitting in the back?
Oh, no, you're not sitting in the back. They fly you first class.
Really?
Making sure you know, prepare. I mean, nice and rested, so they don't want you hurting before you get there.
What do you think made the difference in you finding a role? Because you mentioned kind of bouncing around, and I think that that's something people don't realize. Fans don't realize how hard it is for a player that you just looking for an opportunity. What do you think made the difference in you finding a role?
I feel like really my focus, because I, like, at the beginning of my career, I didn't really know what I was focusing on. I was really just, like, worried about making the team. But then, you know, as I realized that, you know, my ability, obviously I knew my ability, but, you know, as I, you know, went from team to team, I kind of changed what I was focusing on. So instead of focusing on making the team, I was focusing on my role on the team, you know, what position am I going to be able to play best and how many plays I'm going to be able to play instead of just, you know, am I going to be able to make it? I'm worried about getting cut. I wasn't worried about that. I had to just eliminate all those negative thoughts and, you know, focus on actually making those plays on the team. And, you know, what you think about, I feel like you bring it to reality, so.
Justin, what'd you do for fun? Any fun trips during the off season?
Fun trips, not this off season, but usually I go on a cruise with my fiance every off season. So
that's awesome. Where do you guys go?
Oh, we've been to Mexico, been to Jamaica, been to Saint Martin, been to Haiti, a couple other smaller cities. I can't remember.
Cruise is a great way to travel. I was before we were married, but it was with my girlfriend and her family then. It was awesome because the things that you fight about when you travel with family are where to eat and directions, and somebody else is steering the boat, and you always know where you're going to go to eat when you're on the cruise. It was the best way to vacation with family.
Exactly, man. I mean, it's always something different. Always.
Yeah, I was wondering if you played video games at all while Jessamine's laughing at me.
I play a little video games. Probably only two video games I ever play, though, which is Madden and Fortnite.
Okay, see, that's why I wanted to ask. Because when I go home every night, my kids are playing Fortnite every single night. Are you good at this? And why is that game so appealing to everybody?
I don't know. It's just a competitive game. It's like the last man standing. So, you know, if you're the last person on the map, then you win. So, I mean, it's really the competing side, I guess.
Could you show me how to play Fortnite?
I couldn't show you.
You couldn't?
You've got a couple kids. Why don't they show you how to play?
Well, my kids aren't here. We're interviewing him.
Well, he's also got some other stuff to do.
Like, I don't think it would be fair to the listeners, either, that he explained to you how to play a video game.
Well, maybe so. Well, see, here's the thing. You were the one asking a stupid question earlier, and that's my department.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I bridged on your... Do you have a dog? There's another one.
That's the question that Jim usually asks.
I know he does have dogs.
I got three. Yeah. Three dogs.
What kind again?
Two pit bulls and a red-nosed coonhound.
Yeah. Red-nosed coonhound?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
It howls all the time. You know the dogs with long ears.
Yeah, it'd be good. We got anything else for Justin? He's not going to explain Fortnite to you, I'll tell you that.
No,
that's not going to happen.
I didn't have transition between cruise and video games either. That was It wasn't seamless there.
Do people still bring up jumping in the Salvation Army bucket?
Yeah, I mean, that's old, though.
Yeah.
You turned it into a good cause, though.
I had to. I mean, unless I was I was going to get fined if I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fantastic. That was my favorite thing. And then Frank Clark sitting there like wailing on the kettlebell.
I like how you popped the ball out, too.
Yeah, it came flying out.
A lot of people didn't notice that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That was part of it.
Yeah, the popcorn popped. Justin Coleman, really grateful for you joining us. It's fun to see you. We're glad you're back, man. You had a heck of a year. And really, seeing you arrive and really find a place and a role here going forward, we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much.
All right. That is Justin Coleman. It's Danny, Dave, and Moore here. The Seahawks. Wrapping up their first round of mini camp. They'll have a couple more days of practice, and then we'll be off for a month before regular training camp starts. Really fun to see Justin Coleman and to see what he became. That was one of the deals that the Seahawks made last year a week before training camp, and really turned out to be a huge addition to their secondary.
Oh, it was such a great trade. Now, I missed Cassius Marsh because he was the other part of it, but they got him and a seventh back, I think.
Yeah, I believe that's right. It was maybe it was a seventh for, because there were two different deals. I think Cash has got them a fifth and a seventh, and then maybe Seattle traded the seventh for Justin Coleman. I think it was two different deals. So essentially it was Justin Coleman and a fifth round pick they got for Cassius Marsh.
Right. Yeah, either way, they got a great deal with him. And the guy, I mean, he's unbelievable as far as the special teams, the headhunter part of that. I'm not sure what he was talking about with the sinful ears. Do you?
No.
I believe it was because they're not supposed to make references to being headhunters anymore. They were talking about, we're just aggressive tacklers. I'm not sure what would be. He's worried about getting fined for being a headhunter.
Yeah, and the guy had two pick sixes last year, and I just thought he played really well. And I'm glad you asked that question, Danny, because I was wondering the same thing. You know, is that the ultimate goal, to play outside? Because if you play outside, you play every snap, and every player wants to be on the field. And so I just love seeing that. He's a guy that loves football. And, you know, even asking him, because I was going to ask him the same thing, what about this New England Patriot thing? It's no fun playing there. He loves playing football. So, yeah, I just love guys like that. Also, the first question we ask him, he starts talking about the younger guys and how they've developed and how much fun it is watching his teammates progress. And so I mean, he's a good character guy, good guy, and a great player.
Question of how Seattle is going to be. For the first time since 2011, I think you go in with a real uncertainty about what this team is, and that's reflected in a lot of the projections that have them to be 8-8. I find myself thinking that in 2011, the Seahawks didn't have a quarterback. They do now in Russell Wilson. They didn't have a linebacker or really any defensive player that was as good as Bobby Wagner is right now, regardless of whether or not Earl's here. I think people are underrating what the Seahawks will be because they don't recognize the names on the defense. Because Justin Coleman, who we all saw play, Like, he's now one of the more identifiable players. You've seen this massive transition. And in 2011, we didn't know much about this defense. If they had a quarterback in 2011, they would have made the playoffs. If they had a quarterback, they would have. If Russell Wilson was on that 2011 team, they would have made the playoffs. And the idea that this is a rebuilding year, I don't think that's necessarily true. We're going to see if Pete can build the defense again. Can the guys that they've put together can do it. But I think that this team, if I had to pick, are they going to be 500, better than 500, or have a losing record, I'd take better than 500.
Yeah, and you know what? I should have been mentioning him whenever I talk about, look, what all that they have. You know, so, I mean, look, Justin Coleman, he's a really good player. He was the biggest surprise for me last year and the most pleasant surprise. You know, the only one I think that has a lot of pressure on him is Frank Clark, because he's got to get his sack totals have to go up and, you know, into the teens, you know, in order for this defense to stay the same. But I'm with you. I just think the team's being discounted because of the big names, and that's why in Vegas and places like that, I think they're underestimating Pete's ability to coach, and I think they're underestimating a lot of the talent that they already have here.
What about the defensive line, though? I'm excited, actually, to see those guys, the big guys they got, the tackles from Minnesota. And I just go back on, and it's not like I've been watching any film of Tom Johnson and Shamar Stephen. Is that what it is? Yeah. And but I would just assume that those guys are talented because they played on one of the best defenses last year in the NFL.
Yeah, and, you know, I think coming off the edge is really the problem. That's where I think, and it's not, I guess, a problem, but people need to step up. Deion Jordan needs to step up. And, you know, if you can get that guy into double-digit sacks and Frank Clark, I mean, that'd be great. I'm really pretty positive about Jaron Reed. He slimmed down last year. He was more active. He was a guy that I think can actually make plays inside. I feel like he's an established defensive tackle. The guy that I think is another one to keep an eye on is Naz Jones. I think he's gonna develop into a really good player, but you know, he has to take that second year jump. So and stay healthy, hopefully. But really the problem for me whenever I think about it is that you don't really have enough guys as far as totals go. Because those guys inside, they're not going to get a lot of sacks unless you're Cortez Kennedy or Aaron Donald, you know. And it most of it comes off the edge. So I just, somebody has to step up. I don't think there's any good pass rushers out there on the street, and so it's going to have to come from within this group out here, that somebody's going to have to be that pleasant surprise like Justin Coleman.
How much of a question do you have about whether Pete can build this defense again?
I don't have any questions about that. I mean, time and time again, you know, we saw the guys cycle through the Legion of Boom, and you've seen them have success here. And look at the guys around the league, and trying to draw a blank on the kid that went to DB, that went to Jacksonville, played a little bit there, couldn't make this team. I mean, there's been
Will Blackman?
Blackman, yeah. And, you know, they've always been able to develop defensive backs here. So, yeah, I think Pete's defense works. It's sound, and I know that trends come and go, and there is a little bit of, okay, people have figured out exactly what they're going to do, but I never thought there was that much figuring out to do in the first place. They run a very basic defense, which I totally agree with. They mostly run cover three, cover one, which is a three-deep zone and a man-to-man, and it's not hard to figure out. It's about executing, and I feel like the players, they're not having to be burdened or bogged down with a lot of thinking out there. They can more concentrate on their technique, and you're not throwing a whole bunch of stuff at them.
You think they might have to blitz more this year, given the uncertain status of the pass rushers?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think you compromise your defense, because I know they don't want to do that. I think one of the reasons why you don't blitz, too, is you end up taking guys out of the play, because you're kind of guessing a little bit. And, you know, if you said, I remember a couple of times where we called it a dog when it's a linebacker and a blitz when it's a defensive back, and there would be some kind of a dog where it would take me away from the play. And you never want to, as a coach, call something that's going to do that. So, look, yeah, you want to get – ideally, you're going to get pressure with four guys and be able to drop the other seven into coverage. But, yeah, we'll see. If I was Bobby Wagner, I'd be going in there going, hey, why don't you send me a couple times? He's good, man. He's good at it. That's a guy that can – I think, you know, if you send him a few times, he could get five sacks in a season.
Do you have any question about whether Pete can build this again?
No, I don't have any. The question I had that was kind of, I was just sitting here thinking about the offense and the defense because, you know, with the offense, the change to Schottenheimer and Solari coming in and then Norton on the other side of the ball, I'm wondering which unit you think will be better, the offense or the defense this year? Because, Dave, I think you're probably leaning toward the defense, but you can make a case for the offense being better than the defense this year, too, because a lot of people are thinking that the Seahawks are going to have to score more this year to make up for a defense that might not be as good as it's been in the past.
I think that's troubling. If their offense is better than their defense, I don't think they'll make the playoffs. I think that their defense, the way that they play football and the way that Pete Carroll wants to play it, even the changes that they made and the improvements to the offense are about getting back to a style that will accentuate their defense. I think their defense needs to be better. And I do have questions about whether Pete's going to be able to build it again and how quickly he can do that.
Why? Because I just wonder about the parts that he has to work with, because some of these guys, like,
well, I guess that's part of it.
Think with Delano Hill and Tedrick Thompson? I know a lot is expected of those two guys, but I'm thinking, well, if they were that good, that we would have seen more of them last year, and then you could argue, well, wait a minute, they were pretty good players ahead of them.
Yeah, and I would say that it's not just about Pete's coaching and hey, I know the talent's out there. It's about all of it. In 2010 and 2011, they rebuilt this defense, and they did it faster than anybody could have reasonably expected. I mean, the players that they drafted, whether it was K.J. Wright, Bobby Wagner in 2012, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, like all those guys, Richard Sherman, a fifth-round pick who became... I mean, they drafted and developed a defense, and all of a sudden, it's about halfway through 2011, you're like, this defense is really good. And then in 2012, they were backbreakers. They were absolutely awesome. And they waited and got the quarterback, and then the quarterback kind of took off. I wonder, do they have it in them to do that again? And can they do it quickly? Like, are the pieces in place, and can Pete put them together? Like, I've legitimately got that question, and this is kind of the second time through, and Pete's been here 8 years, and he's incredible. But I wonder about that. I think that this is going to be a challenge to both the coaching staff and the front office about how quickly they can get this back together.
Yeah, and I think one of the big questions, I keep bringing this up, is to see how Richard Sherman plays this year, because, you know, as much as we love these players, you know, maybe some of these guys don't have the careers that they've had here. You know, Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, you know, Cam Chancellor. Earl probably plays anywhere. Who knows? But, you know, a lot of the things that they asked Cam Chancellor to do are what made him famous and made him, you know, playing up in the box, playing like a linebacker, able to cover people downfield. I mean, I think a lot of it might be the design of the defense. That's why I don't have much of a doubt that they're going to be able to rebuild it.
It's Danny, Dave, and Moore. The Mariners are going to be taking on the Angels. This is the 5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. We'll get you set for that game and tell you one thing that you need to be aware of about these Seahawks. That's coming up next.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and Moore. Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
It's a 5 o'clock refresh. It's brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. And the Seahawks rebuilt defense. When you see the team on the field like they were this afternoon at the mandatory minicamp, and there's no Earl Thomas, who's not present for the team activities, there's no Cam Chancellor, who's going to undergo tests, there's no Richard Sherman, there's no Michael Bennett, you get a full sense of just how different this team is going to look. No Cliff Avril. I find myself going back, though, to 2011, and that was the start, the birth of this defense, and nobody knew who those guys were either. And when Marcus Trufant ended up suffering a back injury, everybody wondered. There's going to be a process of getting to know this team and seeing just what they're capable of. And Frank Clark, who was out there, Dave, you said it. He's probably the guy who, in some ways, has the most pressure on him to take a huge step forward in his career.
Yeah, going back to 2011, as you were saying there, remember when they brought Brandon Browner in? I was like, that guy can't play. Came from the Canadian League. You can't play corner.
He's going to start at cornerback in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, it was like 4 feet from his knees to the ground, and he just looked awkward. But the way that they developed him, the way that the rules that they have, they make it simple for him, I think. And it's, I think it lends itself to, I think players like playing in that kind of defense more because it's less thinking and it's more about your skill. And, you know, everything's very straightforward, but it's about my technique and my skill and what I'm doing physically rather than, I always hated the coaches that were trying to outsmart everybody, you know, and I'm going to dial up this blitz and that blitz and, you know, I'm going to be a genius. And I think as a coach, you have to watch yourself to that you don't become that kind of guy because you can get too caught up in it. And what really what you want to do is just put guys in a position to make plays, and I think that's what they do. So, again, I think the biggest pressure, yeah, definitely Frank Clark. Maybe throw Deion Jordan in there too, and maybe Jaron Reed. You know, maybe he's got to get five sacks from the inside. But to me, that's really the only question mark. The other person I forgot about was DJ Alexander, who's really a pretty good linebacker. I mean, he had some things to work on, but I think Ken Norton Jr. is going to really help him. This is probably not cool to do. I wasn't super happy with Michael Barrow's coaching at linebacker. There were things a lot of times that I thought were easy fixes, and I was like, why are they doing that? And I'm not sure how everybody else felt, but like Michael Wilhoit, he didn't have a very good year. I wonder why that is. You know, he had that one interception, and he made a couple plays, but I just thought, you know, maybe it was coaching, who knows. But I'm pretty confident that that Ken Norton's going to be able to do it.
Aren't you hoping the defense will be good as opposed to knowing it's going to be good this year, though?
I'm hoping I'm right. How about that?
Yeah.
Because I don't care about the defense, Jim. I just care about myself. And that I'm kidding.
No, because, I mean, there's some... You know, we always talk about the Mariners, and boy, if this happens, yeah. And if this happens, and if this happens, it's because you kind of look at it. So Earl's holding out, and let's say he doesn't play for the start of the season. So you have McDougald over there, and then I guess you have Delano Hill taking the strong safety spot. You got Barkevious Mingo, who was a washout in Indianapolis, and you're hoping that he's going to be that, what do you call it, the Sam linebacker, or the what
Leo?
Linebacker? The Leo, yeah. And then you're moving Shaq Griffin over to the other side. You like what he did on the right side. Some question about you think he can handle it, but again, you're hoping he can. You hope that works out. I don't know. Just and Deion Jordan, you know that he high pedigree guy with where he was drafted, had some problems in Miami, and you like what you saw, glimpses of him. Just different things, though. Frank Clark, will he be as good without Averill and Bennett?
Yeah, I don't know. Really, you know, if you hope in one hand and you know what in the other, see which one fills up faster. That's why
I don't know that one. Can you explain it to me?
I don't hope, Jim. That's why I don't hope. There's no hoping. No.
Well, like, I mean, Deion Jordan might be Marco Gonzalez, to bring a baseball analogy over to football.
Oh, we don't usually do that on the show. We usually go the other way. Yeah, talk about how Marco Gonzalez might be the Deion Jordan of the Seattle Mariners. No, you're right. I think you're right, Jim. Good. You are hoping that they're good as opposed to knowing that this defense was good. The other thing was this defense wasn't good last year. And that was true before all of the injuries. You remember, I mean, you had
all the runs they gave up?
Deshaun Watson, yeah, I tried to write those off early in the year that their run defense was good except for the four runs that they'd given up that were big runs.
Well, Tennessee.
Deshaun Watson, Tennessee.
What did he throw for? 300-plus?
Yeah, he came in here. Like, and those were before the injuries. The defense wasn't good. And I hope that they're back and better. But it's going to be a massive turnover. You also have the Seattle Mariners hosting the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim tonight. It's time for your Acton's Quality Roofing Report. The roof is open. It was a gorgeous night at the park last night. Like, it might have been, that's about as nice of a June night as you can get. And they're coming back home. They fall behind early. I'm finding myself, I'm completely programming myself around Mariner games. I'm really excited to see them play tonight. They've got a run going, and as unexpected as it was and how it's happened after Robinson Cano's suspension, it's really exciting.
Yeah. How did you guys feel after they get up there and Trout and Pujols both homer?
I felt like it's this back to earth, and then I started rationalizing it with this. It was a long road trip. A lot of times you'll see when a team gets back home after a road trip that you have a letdown in that first game. And so I felt like, and it was like, yeah, Wade LeBlanc, there are going to be nights. Yeah. The words that I heard was, you remember when Jerry was with us last week and we talked to him about the lack of velocity? He's like, and when they have tough nights, it's going to be a little louder than other guys, which is, and I found like, maybe this is one of those nights where they're going to take him and string him up and wail on Wade LeBlanc. Nope, they came back.
Yeah, and he did it himself. And coming back in the fifth inning, we talked about earlier with Ryan Roland Smith. Smith about, you know, he had one out and a guy in second and third ends up getting a pop out and then a strikeout that was to Upton. I didn't realize Upton had that many home runs.
Yeah, he's belted the ball.
Yeah, so, I mean, for him to be able to get him on that one, you saw how fired up he was. So, yeah, that was, again, timely pitching, timely hitting, and then, you know, just cool as can be, Cruz just comes back and hits two home runs over Trout's head.
The second one he hit was all arms. I mean, it was like Cruz was reaching out. He didn't even really get his legs into it at all. He's a strong man.
Yeah, no question. Him and Zunino both, those guys look like... They look like linebackers, you know, and he works hard. And I always think about what Jerry said about Nelson Cruz, that he's a better player in his 30s than he was in his 20s. So, you know, and hopefully Earl Thomas will be that way. This is the second time you smirked at me.
No, I'm laughing because I was just thinking about Nelson Cruz and how wrong I can be so often.
That makes you smile?
Well, I was with Nelson Cruz a couple weeks ago. I thought, okay, I hope this is just a timing issue with him. I hope that he just needs more at-bats and he's going to find himself again. But there was a bigger part of me that was thinking, man, this guy's turning 38 on July 1st. This is probably the beginning of the end of Nelson Cruz. And then look at him.
Why don't you stick up for the old guys, Jim?
Eight home runs.
I know,
in the last
seriously. He writes
games.
Them off. The other thing is, this would be an example where if you hope in one hand and do something in another, where the hope filled up first.
The reason I write.
The hope floats. Hope floats.
The reason I
so
write
the
off
other side.
I write off old guys because of Father Time. He's always undefeated.
He's undefeated. That's what they say.
So yeah, and so you know, I mean, Cruz. You just hope that he can milk it out for the rest of the season here. Well, you guys think you're so funny,
no,
don't you?
No.
Yeah, Jim should be sticking up for old guys because he's an old guy himself. I know.
Well, I consider.
I was laughing about Hope.
Oh, Hope.
Yeah. Hope Solo, not Hope Solo.
No, Hope Solo.
That's not funny. Angels, that's the other thing, you know, 1-2 last time, and you and I were at the game, and they got pounded.
Yes, they did.
Shohei Ohtani was pitching. It was on the Sunday, and they went 1-2 against them in that last stand. That's where they got up there. I was like, maybe this is going to be a team that's pesky for them, like the A's used to be,
mm-hmm.
where they're a lesser team, and, you know, they just have their number. But turned it back around. Like I said, Cruz just – really cool, gets up there. And then the other thing is LeBlanc, Marco Gonzalez, Paxton, what you're getting from those guys, you're seeing those guys develop into, you know, Paxton's an ace.
He's
developed into an ace.
Bonafide ace.
You see the
Bonafide
matchup tonight, it's Mike Leake against a kid that's just 21 years old, Jaime Barria. Yeah, he's 21 years old, just called him up from Salt Lake, but he was with the Angels earlier this year. 7 starts at the major league level, a 2.48 ERA. So it's going to be a tough test for the Mariners tonight against this young kid.
It's going to be fun to see exactly what happens, and then they'll wrap up the series tomorrow. That game is the day game. You'll hear the first pitch tonight, 7:10, right here on 7:10 ESPN Seattle. Pregame show starts at 6. We're going to find out what we learn next.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
And it's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
Don't point at me, Danny. Jessamyn, he's pointing at me.
Boys.
It's time to find out what we've learned.
Sides.
It's brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
Hey, it's good to be back with you guys.
Yeah. It's nice to have you back, Jess. It's good to see you today.
It's good to see you, too. It's good to see all of you. We learned some things today, starting with the Angels' newest player.
Trout just had the one.
Just the one, that's right.
Yeah. No, he had two.
Oh,
we did.
He homered in the first and then Pujols homered?
Yeah. And then Trout homered later in the eighth,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. How do you say that, Danny?
Pujols?
Yeah.
Is that right?
No. Okay. And that's how Gross pronounces.
Well, I'm Gross
confused with that, so we'll just call him, what's his name, Alfred? Albert?
Football and everything else.
Yeah.
There we go.
Alfred Pujols. That remains my favorite thing that Colin Paisley said. And there were a lot of things that I thought Colin Paisley was very funny, was when Groz was saying Pujols and Colin corrected him. And he said Pujols. He goes, where exactly do you think the other L is?
Loved it.
That's a tough one, though.
Pujols?
Is it really?
How about Albert?
Albert? No, that one I can get on board with.
It seems like Albert's gone out of style. I think we should have more Alberts. Albert's a great first name.
How about Alfred? Alfred's like a butler's name.
Alfred is, yeah, because he's the butler from Batman.
Albert.
I have a friend named Alberto.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Oh, boy. Anyway, we also learned why Jim likes the Mariners better than the Seahawks.
I'm more interested in baseball and the Mariners personally.
Why?
Well, because I haven't had any players that play for the Mariners threaten me. So that's that's part of it.
You know what? There's still time. We're not even to the All-Star break.
No, they generally seem pretty cool when they come in. And, you know, if I ask a stupid question, they don't want to strangle me. Who'd be the most likely Mariner to strangle me?
I don't know, but that was like one of the more shocking like responses that I was like, oh, you really hit me with that one.
Yeah.
I was not expecting that at all.
Yeah.
Who would be the one? Kyle Seager? So you get a little,
no, man, because like
you get a little testy with the media.
He's a little testy, but he's not like you remember with Jarrett Weaver, like when Weaver threw at him.
Yeah,
he didn't even charge the mound then. He did tell him he did say go Cougs to him.
Oh, yeah.
Like you could see that pretty clearly. I don't think he would if it was going to be.
They don't have guys like that in this clubhouse though.
You've had baseball players get mad at you before.
Like if Milton Bradley was still here.
Brett Boone and Richie Sexton weren't pleased with you.
Oh, Brett Boone and Richie Sexton, that's right.
Well, nobody on this, because Jess, you've been down there interviewing those guys, mm-hmm. and we've had half of them out there anyway to Edgar's.
Yeah, well, it's just Scott Service's kind of culture that he has there. But if you're talking about past guys, there have been a few.
Randy Johnson.
Sean Figgins got into it with the Horse Whisperer.
Yeah.
The Mariners Whisperer.
He was feisty.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was really, really feisty.
I think Randy
he was also
Johnson.
Terrible. Yeah, Randy Johnson wasn't an overall pleasant.
Oh, no. I could presence. See him.
He was not a real treat.
You know who the worst guy? Mike Hargrove. Hargrove was a jerk.
Oh. No, he wasn't.
Yes, he was.
No, I liked Hargrove.
Really? Yeah.
His wife was cool.
His wife was fine. He was a jerk. If you were, yeah, he was not pleasant.
Wait, was he a player?
No, he was the manager.
Oh, the manager? Because I was going to say, I know Jim wrote an article about the Mariner wives or something like that.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, I got, yeah, Moyer's wife didn't like that. It was a cookbook, and, you know, back in the day, I rated the wives based on how pretty they were. Now I know you can't get away with that, but, you know, 10 or 15 years
now
ago.
Now you know, let's self-edit. Delete, delete, delete. Rewrap. Now I know that it is not proper to do that.
Yeah, but,
it's not okay to do it. Not get away with it. You shouldn't do that. Let's just
I know
go with that.
I would not do that in 2018, but in 2005 when I was looking for something to write about, I thought, well, this cookbook and...
Just, yeah. I think that's what he meant to
yeah,
say.
Yeah, that's exactly what that's he like, meant. He just used different words.
Sometimes Danny will explain things for me when I'm bouncing around, and there you go.
I would say this. I found a Seahawks cookbook that has a Brock Heward recipe in it. It was when I was moving.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It's, I'm going to bring it in tomorrow. It's pretty funny.
Is it sugar and spice and all things nice?
No, but it's like, you can tell that they're the body image show because of how Brock describes exactly what it is that he's making. You'll enjoy that. Also, in the spirit of the body image show, reached a new low last night with Mike Salk commenting on the way the shirt fit on the Mariner Moose. He critiqued the attire of the Mariner Moose.
Is it too tight?
Yeah, he thought it was shmedium.
Well, it's good that that's the thing we're complaining about when it comes to the Mariners.
That's right. Just the Mariner attire.
Finally, today we learned that Nelson Cruz is a top bloke.
Is Nelson Cruz top bloke in your book?
Mate, he's a cracker of a bloke, tell you right now. you'd love to crush a few tinnies with him on a Friday arvo down at the pub. Just absolutely, you know, put away a couple tinnies and have a yarn.
Dave,
you and me, mate.
What the hell is he saying? Can someone translate?
You said something about a Friday arvo. It's afternoon.
Oh, really?
I believe so.
Oh. Yeah. Crush a few tinnies.
I speak some jive.
Want to thank Ryan Roland Smith for joining us, Justin Coleman as well, Curtis Rogers, who made everything smooth back in the studio, and Jessamyn McIntyre, who's back to keep this show mostly on the rails. We'll talk to you tomorrow after the game on Danny, Dave, and More.